This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello. Yes, I'm Grant. And with me today are equally handsome, if not more so handsome, gentlemen, because podcasts are a great visual medium. So just believe me. And then you can look at their profiles and see that I'm not lying. That's... Fellas, that's how you do an opening. I'm with the creators of the soon-to-be Kickstarted book, My Neighbor Necromancer. I'm with Dylan Billion Gilbertson. And Jason, I can't remember what I wrote on your envelope, Piperberg. Hi, guys, how are you?
It was like Waffle Boy or something.
Waffle Puncher?
What? Something like that.
I don't know. I'm in kind of a daze when I do people's envelopes for Kickstarter.
Yeah, you go. Grant goes into a fugue state when he addresses things. We're lucky it even got to us, to be honest.
Hello, but how are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm very excited to finally be on this esteemed Oddvision program.
Yes.
Yeah, it's back from the dead. To talk to you guys, but before we get into other things about the book, which side note, some of our other mutual buds and I have been privy to like the process and like the origination of this book, and we're all super super fucking pumped to see this thing finally seeing the light of day. So that's my unprompted endorsement. And you guys can't do anything about it now. So,
oh crap! Yeah, when did we first start talking about this?
Yeah, that like last year,
two years ago, maybe now.
I mean, you started talking about it
way before
as like that. An idea, and then I think it took you a little while, and then you randomly DM'd me, and you were like, "Do you want to do this?" DM'd and I was like, you want me to do this? Okay.
I slid right into those DMs. Right in. like Subway.
So speaking of sliding into DMs, where'd you guys grow up? We'll start with Jason.
I grew up in Marietta, Pennsylvania, which is basically Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I thought you were going to say Marietta, Georgia, and I was about to be shocked.
No. Marietta, Pennsylvania, which is it's like a mile and a half long borough that's like in Lancaster County. It's Lancaster County. I mean, like it's so, and Lancaster, for anyone who's not in Pennsylvania, it's near where Amish people are. And it's also, it's like an hour and a half from Philadelphia, which is where I live now.
So. Did you guys get like really good pies and stuff?
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
look, man, Amish people, they drive carts and they make really good pies. That's basically what I know. But we can make fun of them, guys. It's not like they can listen.
Oh my god.
Well, okay. I do want to say, and I'm sorry for the very loud car that is in the background. If anyone could hear that, I don't know.
I can't hear it.
Okay, good. When I was a kid, there's an amusement park called Dutch Wonderland, which is like between where I grew up and Philadelphia.
Are they all Ferris wheels that look like windmills?
No, like, they're very. It's like very tame rides, like the which I liked because like I wasn't like huge on roller coasters, so I don't know what it was called, but there was one roller coaster that was like the drop was like not severe at all. It was more just like it was like if you went over like a steep hill on a car. And I was like, this is fun. But no, there was one time where I went with my sister, my older sister, and I was like 4 or 5. I had no idea who Weird Al was. And she was in high school because she's 10 years older than I am. And she was like, I think that's Weird Al. And it was, and she was like, let's go say hi to him. And I didn't want to, and she had to take care of me. So we didn't. And she was mad because it definitely was him because it was right when he recorded the Amish Paradise video.
I was going to say, yeah.
So
that's amazing.
That's a thing.
I'm going to tell everybody that the artist for this book is in the Amish Paradise video. That's not at all what that story was, but that's what it'll be when I tell people.
I mean, you know, it's like what the Whisper Down the Lane or Telephone or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Message gets distorted. Yeah. We'll just skip all the steps and distort it for ourselves. Yeah,
everyone's version of any story is just as valid. That's exactly what that
right,
is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sub question.
Yeah.
Was the food tent there called the Dutch Oven?
I could not tell you. I do not remember. But
what good were yes. you as a child? You don't want to be Weird Al.
I wasn't.
There any funny names?
No. The only good thing I did as a child was, I don't know, nothing. I learned how to draw. Like that was.
I'm currently changing your artist profile to esteemed artist who was in the Amish Paradise video and once gave Weird Al a Dutch Oven.
This is all, you know what, fine.
Perfect.
It'll if it gets us more backers, you know.
Yeah. If it gets you that Weird Al endorsement,
I mean that would be pretty cool if he backed it. Shout out to Weird Al if somehow he finds this and wants to back the project and give me an autograph so my sister will forgive me.
I mean, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah,
meant to family. Al,
yeah,
meant to family.
Speaking of families, Dylan, let's talk about where you grew up.
I grew up in a little podunk town in Oregon called Prineville. We're most famous for the home of Les Schwab tires.
Oh. Quick side note.
Yeah.
Do you get irrationally angry when people say Oregon?
I mean, I used to, and then I got over it. To be honest. That filed under the things that like I recognize are outside of my locus of control. And my therapist said that was a healthy thing to do. Yeah, so I grew up most of my life in Prineville, Oregon. I did a small stint of growing up in Alaska in another small podunk town called Soldotna that's right on the Kenai River. And it was everything you would think a podunk town is, and I'll let your imagination run with that.
Were there bears in the street?
There are now. I actually once, when I came back from Alaska, all my friends in grade school were like, oh, what was Alaska like? And I told them the wildest lies about how, about like, yeah, I was eating my sandwich during lunch at recess. And then I went in to talk to the teacher, and then I came back out, and I saw a polar bear was running away with my sandwich. No way, really? But like, I could never keep a lie going for very long. And so they'd be like, oh, no, wait, really? And I'd be like, no, I'm sorry I said that.
And then you brought in Steve Nails and Ben Temple Smith's 30 Days of Night. And you're like, this was my town.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I actually didn't – I don't know. When did that book came out? Because
oh,
I didn't –
Oh, boy.
I was as a comic book writer, I'm embarrassed to admit that I actually didn't know about that book until the movie came out.
Oh, no. Same here, man.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fantastic. It's a great book. And I'm actually a fan of the movie. I think the movie gets some hate, but I think it's a quite enjoyable little film.
It's got Josh Hartnett, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Then anyone who doesn't like it, they can go join up with the Amish.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? I mean, there's, you know, I feel like that's a lifestyle change probably for most people. But
yeah, they're going to have to really make some adjustments for that one.
The worst part is giving up Weird Al music.
They can bring the 30 Days of Night book with them, though. Right?
It's true. And speaking of books, I'm really good at segues, you guys.
I can tell, clearly. Oh, yeah.
The family one was a legitimately good segue. That was great. I was impressed with that.
Oh, it's good because we start up here, visual medium again. I'm holding my hand up, and then we end up down here.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a Dutch roller coaster. It's just a gentle glide down to the bottom.
So Dylan, continue on about when you first got the bug to like start writing. Because you're a really good writer. You've done Sweetheart was your big book with Action Labs. That's how I found you. But like, how were you creatively from I just got back from Alaska to know I want to write comic books?
Yeah. So like I said, I told a lot of fibs when I was a kid. But like I said, I could never keep them going for very long. But I always tried to write creative stories. I had a friend who I thought was always much better at it than me. And so I always kind of felt down about doing it. So I always kind of had like this, I always kind of wanted to, but was always kind of afraid to do it, even though nobody was going to read it. I was very self-conscious about it, even though nobody was looking at it. And then when I got to college was when I started like being more confident with my ideas, and they all kind of came from classes that I took. I was a health major in college, and I went through a lot of genetics classes and a lot of physiology classes, anatomy classes, and a lot of it was learning something that was real and useful and then going the opposite direction with it, which was comics. And so I would think of these weird ideas, and they were the stupidest little nuggets of ideas. One of them was, I had this idea for a character called Humanzy. And we were learning how similar human and chimpanzee DNA was, and like just how close they were in reality. And I was like, that's such a small amount. Like, what are the chances that could just like randomly flip? And like, that's never gonna happen, like just on a whim, like one generation, like suddenly there was a human born from a chimpanzee. Like, that's not how evolution works at all. But like, I was like, what if that happened? And so I had this idea of just like the most normal dude you've ever met. He's just a schmo who works a 9-to-5 job. He doesn't wash his pants very often. He has a dirty picket fence out in front of his house, and like he's just kind of a schlub. And he was Humanzy, and his special thing was that he was born from a family of chimps.
Don't give this away wholesale. Yeah, this is a great idea. What are you doing?
I can't believe you just gave that free IP away.
Yeah. Oh well. I mean, it's on record now that it's mine. So like, if someone makes it, I've got whatever the copyright law is of pre-existing before or whatever. We've got proof.
Joke's on you. I'm copywriting it right now.
Oh, crap. Oh, crap. It belongs to the Yeti now. Oh, no. I had another one that was, we were learning about your airway is supported in some areas by cartilaginous rings, like these rings of cartilage that kind of hold it open. And I was like, what if you were born without those? What if you didn't have those and you had to gulp air? Like, you had to swallow air every time you breathe. And so I had this idea for this really unfortunate character who I didn't name him, but he was just a gulper, and he had to gulp air. And I had this awful noise that accompanied it. And it was so stupid. But like, it made everybody laugh. And like, that was kind of the point of it at the time.
Little did they know it was a tragedy.
Yeah, right. and then I actually started writing a story for a comic format with this idea with a girl that I knew in college, and the book was called Bear Arm Baby. And it was another weird thing born from a genetics class and about how malleable stem cells were. And the premise was this woman was pregnant and there were complications at birth and the baby was going to be born with no arms. And so they opted for a procedure where they could try and grow arms onto the fetus. But then he tells an intern, he's like, go get me the baby DNA. And the guy has headphones on while he, and so he's like, right away. And he goes to get the DNA. He's like, what did he say? He said, baby, bear DNA. And so he grabs a vial that says bear DNA and he brings it to him. And he does this, the doctor does his procedure. And then as he's closing up the womb, his pocket that's full of scalpels falls into the womb while he's closing it up and he doesn't realize it. And then when the baby is born, it's born with these huge bear arms that it can walk on. So it like walks on its bear arms. And on one of its claws, they're all like razor sharp scalpels. And he became bear arm baby. And we wrote like 10, it was just 10 posts of this webcomic. And it's probably the worst thing you'll ever read, and but it's what it's either the worst or the best thing you'll ever read. I guess I'll say that probably the former. But it's anyway. That was the first real comic that I ever wrote.
Bear arm baby,
and I think it's on my website still, dylandoescomics.com. it's up there for free, I think, and then. I don't know. And then several years later, I don't know. I just sort of stuck with it and sort of wrote to myself in my off time until I finally, to be honest, I met Luca Romano, who's our colorist from My Neighbor Necromancer. I approached him for my first project ever and we sort of hit it off and I became good friends with Luca.
Well, that's wild.
So yeah, that's sort of my long-winded nutshell for how I got started in writing comics.
And Jason, I want to know, how did you go from hating Weird Al as a 5-year-old to when you were doing covers for Archie?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I do not hate Weird Al. I just didn't know who he was. And actually,
Same thing.
I didn't listen to basically anything but Weird Al until late middle school. I mean, like I knew other music, but I didn't like have any other CDs. Those were the only CDs I had were Weird Al CDs. So correcting the record there, I guess, for some reason. So I mean, this is like a cliche answer, but I can't remember not being able to draw or not trying to draw. I mean, I remember not being able to draw, but not trying to draw. Because, you know, when you're a kid, I wasn't good at drawing.
I was hoping you were going to say, I didn't know how to hold a pen.
I've always held it like very correctly, you know, air quotes. I started out just drawing on sketch paper or whatever growing up. My grandparents had a frame shop and my mom is and was, or was and is an artist. And so I had a lot of like encouragement there. And I used to draw on these big like mat boards that you use for framing.
Okay.
That my grandparents would just have like extras of. And so I would like draw. I used to draw a lot of Sonic. I love drawing Sonic for some reason.
Man, a lot of Sonic.
A lot of Sonic. Yeah. I used to draw like, I used to do it in like motion. Like I would have like motion lines. Like, so it was kind of like comics, but I didn't have panels. It was just like,
yeah.
So I did that a lot growing up. And then I started drawing comics for fun. Like, I think I did like a little, I loved Hook. I still love Hook, the movie. And I did like a Peter Pan comic for myself. Like, just like, it was like 3 pages. It wasn't anything special. My graduation project for middle school and high school was a comic.
That's cool.
So I self-published in high school. It was a 20-page comic.
What was it and why haven't I read it?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's bad.
Listen, I just told you all about Bear Arm Baby.
I know, but that's still like a fun... I mean, okay, so like it was a teenage superhero. Very kind of, I mean, I do actually kind of want to potentially reboot it if I can reboot a thing that
now we're talking. Reboots are all the rage now.
Oh yeah. But I have an idea of like what I would want to do with that character if I ever went back to it.
Yeah.
But it was basically just like the comic opens with like him backfisting somebody who's trying to mug him, and then like running into a pawn shop and finding like a belt buckle that gives him powers. And like the end of the book is just him finding out it has powers. And that's it. It's not like it was just like a cliffhanger and I never went back to it. It was just like,
that's a great origin story.
What kind of belt buckle? Let's talk about this buckle.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a lot of ideas for where it came from. It was like archaeology stuff. I mean, I went through like so many different iterations of this. The original one that I did for middle school is like the same character, but a totally different power set. Like everything was different. I just couldn't give up on the idea. I just kept like rehashing it constantly and being like, no, now it's this, and now it's this, and now it's this. And I just kept, instead of like coming up with a new character, I just kept like changing the existing one. He had portals. Like that was, I ended on him having like portals that he could cast.
One with portals.
And then Portal like came out like right as I was doing that. And I was like, damn it. Like, I was in high school. I didn't know that was like a normal sci-fi trope. Yeah. So that was, there's nothing there. Like there was no, I didn't even have like a thematic element or anything cool, like Bare Arm Baby. It was just like normal teenage superhero thing. Cause I really just wanted to draw it. Like I've only recently wanted to like start writing. That's never been a strength for me, right? Like visual stuff has always been more of a strength.
Basement and Bloater is great though.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Well, that's more recent. That's like me trying. Oh, like yeah. Well, I mean, it does, but even that, like it's not, there's nothing like that ambitious writing wise so far, at least like in the ones that I've published.
This might be a misinterpretation of the word ambitious, but you don't need to have like crazy ambitious concepts and stories for it to be just a really good read.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Like, I love Spaceman and Bloater, but
I mean, it evolves
over time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that, you know, Spaceman and Bloater is a thing that I do obviously really like that concept. Anyway, I'm totally losing the thread. You asked about the Archie covers. So
just to get to getting there,
now who has a long-winded nutshell. So anyway, I went to University of the Arts for college. So after high school, I go to University of the Arts for college specifically because I literally just Googled art schools in Philadelphia. And part of the reason that I did that was because the character that I did that self-published comic in high school for, which was called Entity, he lived in Philadelphia. So I was like, well, if I live in Philadelphia, then I'll know all about the city and I can have like a better. So that was like my idea. I never actually followed through on it, but I did go to college. And so that's like how I started to get better at drawing, I guess. I mean, I was always like kind of okay. Like I had like a natural aptitude for it, but having like actual structure and not just having like an art teacher in high school who's like, I'll help you like in between periods or whatever.
Right.
And then graduated from college and it took, I think the Archie covers were like, I don't know, a couple years afterwards, like 2015, 2016.
Did they contact you and were like,
yes. So
stuff online.
So the thing about this, about that with the Archie covers is the editor who I worked with on those was actually the brother of somebody I went to college with.
Oh.
So I think that's how he knew about my work.
Okay. Gotcha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's how I got those covers. And initially they only wanted me to do, they just contacted me for one. And then, which was the, if anyone knows about the covers, which are on my website, jasonpiperberg.com, if you can spell it. It'll be in the show notes, maybe. I don't know. There are show notes. I don't know. What are we doing? So anyway, my last name might be hard to spell. The Da Vinci inspired one with like the man that has his arms out, but it's Mega Man. You know, there's lots of covers that homage that. But that was like one of my thumbnails, my rough sketches. And then I sent the other, I sent like a batch of them and they liked two of them and they were like, well, let's do both. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got two covers, two cover jobs.
Jason is now notorious after he presented this Mind Embered Necromancer cover to me for having baller ideas for covers, but like really underplaying it. Jason and I went back and forth for months about cover ideas. And a lot of them were like my ideas, like, well, what if we did this? And then he would like sort of author my idea. And like we went back and forth forever. And then I don't know, maybe a month ago.
I don't know if it was a month ago. I think it was like two weeks.
Real fast. But you were like, I got this idea. I don't know. And I was like, not only is this the cover, this has to be the damn cover. It's so good and it's so layered and it's got so much meaning in every square inch of it. It's perfect. And I was like,
that dude's just dragging his feet, looking ashamed.
Yeah, just like walking in very blasé. Is like, I might have the greatest idea for a cover ever, but like, I don't know.
I didn't know if you guys were gonna go for it. I thought you. No, I mean,
it's amazing. I don't know.
Well, because like we had done, I think it was partially also because we'd done so many ideas. I was like, this isn't gonna be it. Like, I just.
Yeah, he just lost hope at that point.
Yeah, I was just like, there isn't gonna be a cover. I'm just gonna like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Covers are hard. Covers are like.
Well, what do you mean? Like, well, because, in terms of there's pressure?
Well, like, if you're just going to do, like a not like a pinup cover, but, like, if it's just, like, an action shot, like, if it's, like, Spider-Man kind of stuff where it's just, like, this cover's Spider-Man doing Spider-Man stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that's contextual, Paulo Rivera is, like, one of my favorite artists, and part of that is because a lot of his covers are just, like, his covers are, like, they're almost like editorial illustrations in like how high concept some of them are, or just like how well done they are. There's like I love Paul Rivera, but I really like it when I can come up with something that's like a little bit more thematic rather than just drawing like a scene from a book from the story or whatever. And that is really hard for me sometimes because there's like, it's just like a lot more thought, right? Like there's a lot more, like you have to compose things in a certain way. Like the cover, for anyone who hasn't seen it, for Mind Embered Necromancer, is the main character Jesse is like crouched over like a stream or a creek and is seeing her reflection in the water, but the reflection is a skeleton. You can describe it if you want.
No, I'm just gonna say that there's spoilers in it if you know where to look for the spoilers. There's spoilers for issue one if you know what you're looking for.
Right.
And I just want to make sure we don't reveal that.
Right. Yeah. No. I'm not gonna. No. But I was just gonna describe it purely on the aesthetics. But yes, that's a good point. but to that point, actually, part of the reason that I like doing covers like that is because the cover takes on new meaning after you've read the book, right? That's the kind of stuff that I like. Like, if you can look at the book and go like, oh, that's really cool. And then you'll finish reading it and you'll go back and you'll look at it again and you'll go, oh, and it's like creating, like when you watch a movie multiple times or a show multiple times and you start seeing stuff like, oh, they did kind of maybe plan some of this out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like when you watch the first Fast and Furious movie.
Oh my god! Yeah.
You watch it, and then you're like, "Wow, they were really fast and furious." I get it. You know,
they had to furiously stop that DVD player. I saw that movie in the theater, fellas.
Yeah.
I saw Transformers 1 in the theater, and then horrible. After I came out of Transformers 1, I saw a semi truck without the trailer that had. It was blue and had flames on it. And I was like,
I get that.
I kind of want to break format because I really like this topic that you brought up. Dylan, what do you think about like cover arts and their purpose?
Their purpose?
Or just how, like Jason said, where anyone can do like a Wolverine is fighting somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not well-versed on... I mean, I can't think of the covers this quickly off the top of my head.
Well,
So one of my favorite single issue comics is the Swamp Thing Winter Special that came out a while ago. And if you know the story to that book, like, you'll know the cover. I don't think it brings on new meaning, but it elevates the meaning that it has initially. Mm-hmm. And to Jason's point, I totally agree. I love books that they exemplify the theme of the story within it, even if you don't realize it when you're seeing it. And so, right, like, action shots are cool. Great. I love them. But, like, if you have one that is almost a story in itself, it's magic. I love it. I'm also a huge fan.
It's like a good movie trailer.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You're
the type of person who watches trailers.
Right. No, I've known none of us watch trailers because we hate spoilers for everything, even if it's a movie we're not going to see. So, yeah.
Wait, they're Fast and Furious?
Well, all bad. I like this bit. Covers are, I feel like covers is like almost like a, it's like a newer skill that I'm trying to build in a sense. Like, I've done a bunch of covers, but
it's almost like, I don't know if this is still to your point, Jason, but it's almost like it's the same difficulty with writing a pitch or writing a log line. Cause like you have a book or a story that has so many moving parts, and to you who wrote it or who drew it, like, you know the ins and outs of all the things that are so important to the story, and it becomes very, very difficult to distill that into its bare parts because every part to you is important. Mm-hmm. And you need to learn how to throw some of that stuff out. And so, like, with a cover, you know how to do that, and not only do you need to be able to distinguish what the real true themes are of the book, but you need to be able to, you know, show that, like, make up an image that exemplifies that.
Right. Yeah. I think part of the reason that I think it was hard for us to land on something is because there are so many thematic elements that are important to us in this story.
Right.
And, you know, picking any one of them to focus on, or multiple ones to focus on, and having the cover still be cohesive was hard. It's like, what's the focal point, right? And I think in general, like any kind of storytelling, you need to have a focal point to structure everything else around. You can't just throw everything at the wall and be like, look at all of it. It's like, it's not.
I think before this cover, we were like, let's all, like, our best note that we had to give ourselves was, let's make it fun and scary.
Yeah, it was.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's a starting place for sure.
Sure.
But I think maybe I was just stewing on it for a few months in the back of my head.
Listen, maybe stewing on it is what brought it to what it is, but it's fantastic, and I smile every time I see it. I love it.
Yo, sometimes you just gotta marinate that meat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jason is a vegetarian, so it's a lot funnier to say that Jason was marinating meat.
Yeah. I find it disgusting. No, I don't care.
He eats eggs now, so he's alive.
Don't out me to the whole world.
Oh,
No, Grant said vegetarian, so that's accurate. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, no. All right. Well, are eggs, I'm going to out myself as an idiot now. Are eggs vegetarian? I know they're not vegan.
Eggs are vegetarian. There's a very simple distinction here.
That doesn't make any sense.
That can't be real.
No, eggs are vegetarian.
No, they're not.
Yeah, look. Here's the difference.
I know that you've been a vegetarian longer than I've known what it is. But this is not correct.
Look, are eggs meat?
Yes.
No, they're not.
Eggs are
animal protein.
So the Google, according to australianeggs.org.au.
Trustworthy news site.
It says, by definition, vegetarianism is classified as excluding any form of animal flesh, parentheses, the tissue, muscles, or meat of an animal.
Yep.
And then it says, the humble egg doesn't fall into this category.
Exactly.
It's therefore included in a vegetarian eating pattern.
The difference between vegan and vegetarianism is that vegetarians will eat everything except for meat, like flesh, whereas vegans will not eat anything that is not an animal byproduct or comes from animals or is an animal or anything like that.
I'm calling shenanigans on vegetarians.
In fact, vegans. In fact, vegans also have. There's a debate on whether or not honey is okay to have.
Which
for me, I was like, honey's good. I'm not giving up honey. So even the whole time that I've been vegan, until like 3 months ago, I started having eggs again. honey was always there. So come after me, vegan people, if you want.
We don't need to be making enemies right now, Jason.
No, it's
no, no come after me to support
vegans,
the book.
Vegans don't listen to podcasts. Vegans don't listen to podcasts.
It's true. I listen to a lot of podcasts.
You're vegetarian.
Yeah, you're
now.
Yeah,
but you're for years I've listened to podcasts.
Well, then you were never truly vegan, I think.
Oh. Podcasts are not vegan because they contain animal byproducts.
Yeah, we just established that they have the faces of animals.
Blood, sweat, and tears, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So trying to get back on track. This is a
comic book podcast.
It's a comic book podcast. I want to talk a little bit more about My Neighbor Necromancer. When does the Kickstarter drop?
June 15th.
Okay. So
it'll start. It'll be up for 28 days. We'll have 28 days to raise our goal of $10,000.
Well, that's doable. That's more than doable.
I hope so. If it's not, I'm coming after you. I'm not coming after anybody.
We're not violent.
No.
Except towards eggs.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Okay, yeah.
I just can't wait till you're
wanted a snappy comeback for that. And I couldn't think quick
enough. No, it's gonna be great when in 3 more months you're like, guys, I tried fish.
Yeah.
Actually, I did have fish. I had a tiny bit of lox when I was at my mom's house.
So now you're a pescatarian.
I'm not going to make a habit of eating.
I'm not into labels.
it's complicated, Grant.
It's not a visual medium.
My Facebook status with my diet.
Winking, really stage wink.
My Facebook status, my relationship status with veganism and vegetarianism, it's complicated.
So this book.
So the camping starts on the 15th of June. It'll run to, I think, the 13th of July.
Nice.
If we reach 100% funding, we'll have 2 stretch goals.
Are they surprises or can you say what they are?
I cannot say what they are just yet.
Son of a bitch.
As much as I would like to, I cannot.
Mm-hmm. I can. No, I'm sorry.
And it's kind of funny because you guys already talked about the origin of this this book, how you guys were like slid in his DMs and said, hey, what's up?
Yeah. Well, like the idea for it sat, and like I said, in my notepad for several years. I remember the first time I wrote it down. I have no idea how it came about, but I was sitting in the back of my friend's car. We were driving to karaoke night in San Diego. And like people in the car were already singing because they were jazzed about karaoke. And then people got mad at me because I wasn't singing because I was like furiously writing this idea down on my phone. I was like, hold on, this is important.
And it was.
It was. And then I remember the initial idea was this kid chases his pet dog into the woods. And then the necromancer that they found was going to be the villain. And they were going to have to like steal a book from the cabin or whatever, and then learn necromancy to fight back. And like, that's a fine idea. And then my wife, sometime later, told me this story about her mom used to live next door to somebody who had a pet duck named Bibbits.
Bibbits.
And so I was like, a duck is a cool, weird pet. And so like, after a lot of thought and a lot of back and forth, I was like, I decided that the pet in Necromancer was going to be this pet flying lizard for various reasons. And then as soon as I heard the name Bibbits, I was like, there's no better name for a lovable little creature than Bibbits. And I was like, it's so perfect. And I, as soon as I heard Bibbits, I was like, I would die for this animal. And I love him. And then I started rewatching and sort of rereading a lot of books and movies that sort of treated death, the idea of death, like a lot differently. So, I mean, like Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett do this great job of like personifying death as like this really disarming figure. One of my favorite things Neil Gaiman ever wrote was that issue of Sandman that follows death, or like a day in the life of death. I think it's called like the in her wings, or in the wings of death, or something to that effect.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's gonna bug me now.
And it's
like beating up her wing.
It's about death just being a friend, like being there and helping in the only way they know how, and basically just doing their job, like a very necessary, but very misunderstood friend. And death is like, I don't know, I always felt like death is like this great motivator. Like it's very terrifying, and like it needs to be terrifying in order for it to be helpful. Like death is a motivator. It makes you want to do more and potentially, hopefully, better things. And so it's a weird thing to grapple with, something that you need to be afraid of in order for it to help you. And so I started like sort of chew on that, and I was like, well, what if death was actually there to lend a hand? Like, what if death was your friend? Well, then people that practice necromancy, like, they can't be inherently bad, like, but there's always going to be bad people. And so then the idea of a bad necromancer became a good necromancer. But then there's a split into good and bad necromancy. So people will wield the power in very different ways, which is how we got the main villain of the story. Her name is Arrakis. She uses necromancy in a much more chaotic and evil way. And so then after I sort of cracked that shell or that nut, I was like, we're off to the races. Like, this is absolutely a story that I need to do things with. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of wrote everything out and finally, thankfully, approached Jason about it, who jumped on board.
And it was really fun watching Jason do the character designs, because the like hearing you initially talk to us about the story, it's a fascinating story, and there's nothing quite like seeing the world that you envision suddenly take shape under a talented artist, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason and I think we talked about this like a few days ago, actually, about this weird space and this, it's not a skill, but just this weird mindset you need to accept, where when you hand off your concept or your words to an artist, and then it's either exactly what you envisioned or it's better. Because mm-hmm. the artist makes always, I mean, at least in my experience, the artist always makes it better than what you've envisioned, because they're the artist. Like, they yeah. have a much better sense of visual space and what works and what doesn't work. A lot of my visual ideas don't work that great. But Jason always recognizes that and then puts in exactly what it needed. And so when he first handed in those concept pages, I think I out loud was like, shut up. Because I was in disbelief about how cool they looked. And like this, the designs of Arrakis and Cyrano. Arrakis is the main antagonist, and Cyrano is the friendly mentor necromancer. And like, I lost my mind at how cool they were. They were so great.
Thank you. I think the other part that was cool for me was that the character designs weren't even like the end stage, because once you saw the character designs, you started getting other story ideas. Like, yeah. I did this random, I mean, I won't spoil anything, but I made a design choice on one of them, and
from that, Arrakis, like, eyes?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know how much you wanted to say about that, but like,
yeah. I don't know. We could talk about that.
It was just like an off the cuff thing. I was just like, this looks kind of cool. And then it went from this looks kind of cool to like, you coming up with a whole reason for that, and I hadn't even, I was just doing it because it looked cool. I wasn't thinking about story reasons.
I mean, there's a lot of backstory that like we just don't have the space for in like a 5 to 6 issue miniseries. I mean, we'll get to some of it, but like the basics of it are that when she was a student necromancer, when she was young and first trying to like learn her way in necromancy, there were forbidden magics that she wasn't allowed to do, but she, because she's Rakkus and she's very reckless and sort of a, just a chaotic individual all around, she tried them anyway and ended up sort of staring into this well of souls, if you will, and sort of like seared her eyes, and sort of like this fire comes out and sort of scorches her eyes around the edges, and it became just this really cool visual element of Rakkus's design. It was so cool. But then like when I saw that, like that's sort of what I envisioned as the basics of what happened. And then I started like making this web of connections to who she was as an individual and what her motivations are and like why she would be trying to do that, like on a personal level. And like it all just worked perfectly, and it was great. I think I said this before somewhere else, but everything about My Neighbor Necromancer, it all fits and it gels so well that like I've never had an easier time writing a pitch or a log line for it. Like that's like I was saying it earlier, just in this podcast, like it's usually the hardest part is writing like the 3 sentences that boils the entire story down to present to people. But like as soon as I started, I was done in like 5 minutes. And I was like, that was so easy because I know exactly where it's going. I know exactly what's appealing about this, and it's just perfect. I love it.
To kind of branch off of that, so let's say you guys are eating spaghetti, or any sort of like elongated noodle, and you find out that like it's actually the hair of these weird giant underground beasts, and you've been eating spaghetti your entire life. Would that be fucked up?
Well, as a vegetarian, I mean, I can't eat the flesh or hair of anything.
But you've been eating it your whole life.
You were eating fish a minute ago. What if they're fish?
I was trying to make it. I was trying to make a clever joke, Dylan.
What if they're fish beasts?
Yeah.
Hairy fish beasts.
And they desperately need Kickstarter. have their noodles shorn.
I mean, it would be kind of fucked up. Yeah, I don't know if I'd like that.
Just like on both like a culinary level and just on a reality level. Like what? Like I forget. Did you say where these beasts were, or where they came from, or what they were?
I said underground, but it kind of makes sense if they're like an aquatic, almost like a fish Morlock kind of thing.
I was thinking about like ramen, I think is why I went to.
Well, I guess
all noodles, all elongated noodles.
Yeah. It's fucked up on a culinary sense. It's fucked up just like on a world scale that like not only is there this, now we've discovered this new creature, but there's also like a fairly, what I imagine, a large cabal of individuals who have always known about this creature and have just been making spaghetti noodles out of it.
It's forever. Real weird. Since
the turn of spaghetti.
Yeah.
And Jason, you said ramen, like this could be like an entire global thing where each region has their own type of fish Morlock that they shorn to get their noodles.
Yeah, I mean, I hate this idea, personally.
Yeah, this sounds terrifying. Like thinking about the different creatures that have different kind of noodles for hair is like hitting a weird, like the same thing, like tryptophobia. Like when you see it, like you just kind of like that, like imagining,
I mean, these weird creatures. Kind of an interesting, it's an interesting character design idea though, to have make different people with different types of, like what's the fettuccine hair and what's the angel hair. Oh my God, angel hair! Oh my God, that's
maybe now we've brought the afterlife into this.
Oh, and it looks like Dylan is now copywriting this idea. So I guess shit. Turnabout is fair play.
Is it too late to go back and give Rakkus angel hair?
No, I'll just do it on all the pages I haven't drawn yet.
Okay.
but we'll keep it'll just be a weird continuity error, like she had the wrong wig on.
That makes sense.
And then in issue four, they eat her hair by accident. They're like, oh my gosh, right. this is just pasta.
That'll be like, what's the story that like Lex Luthor originally had hair until in like one panel or whatever, the artist just like didn't realize that the character he was drawing was supposed to be like Luthor and drew a bald guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. So at that point, and then from that point on, they're like, oh no, he lost his hair.
It's canon.
Is that really how it happened?
I think it's something to that effect. I might be paraphrasing a bit. But...
can confirm.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty fun.
That would be fucked up.
It's like, oh man. So sneak peek spoilers for issue two. There's a character named Backstrom. And the funny story about that is like I love that name so much. And it came about because when I was texting Jason about this idea for a character that I had, I was saying something about backstory and the typo was Backstrom. And he's like, that's an interesting name. And I was like, that's the name.
Well, going off of that, since you were talking about Neil Gaiman, that's a very Neil Gaiman thing because apparently the way he came up with Coraline was because he misspelled Caroline in an email.
Yeah.
And he thought, that's an interesting name, which also, I've met Neil Gaiman because he was the commencement speaker for my college when I graduated.
Mm.
So also, coincidentally, cool. Neil Gaiman's hair is made out of pasta.
Oh.
I mean, and I can confirm that because I have met him. So
it tasted his hair.
Yeah. Well, actually, what happened is like after the commencement speech, like we went to the reception and we were just like in the main hall for one of the UArts buildings, and I was just kind of like hanging out and like waiting for one of my friends to show up. And I looked up and Neil Gaiman was like on one of the balconies. And I was like, oh my, is he just hanging out? And I like went up and there was like a group of people that was like kind of near him. I was like, are you like waiting? And they were like, for what? And I was like, oh my God. And I just like went up and I was like, hey, that was a really great, I didn't know what to say to him. I was just like, that was a really great speech.
I love you.
Yeah. He was like, oh, no, I'm not going to do his voice. But he was like,
please
don't do it. Don't you do it.
I'm not going to do it. But he was just like, he was very nice. And then I felt really bad because after I did that, everyone started coming up to him. I felt so bad.
You outed him.
I did. I didn't mean to. But it was like as soon as like I was there, then like my friends saw that I was there and they were like, wait, who's Jason talking to? And then it became this thing. And then eventually he left. And it's like, oh, no.
Man, you pulled a Jesse from my neighbor Necromancer, and you sort of stumbled upon and revealed the location of this of this ancient mage. And
that now, was in plain sight. Now
everyone's after him.
Yeah.
What a dick.
What a dick. You heard it here first. Jesse's a dick.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying Neil Gaiman. I was going to say
no.
No, I'm at you.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess. I mean.
So, having called you a dick, we're going to go into the final five questions.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we're approaching almost an hour, and I don't.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's gonna. Crap. I don't. This is gonna suck to edit. So.
I'm sorry. You're so easy and fun to talk to. And I don't mean that in like a content way because it sounds good on this podcast. Like, legitimately, Grant, like you're one of the funnest dudes to talk to.
Yeah. Also, I apologize in advance because I've cleared my throat a couple times, I just realized. And that's probably going to be a pain in the ass.
No. I don't think he's going to go that deep.
I'm just telling you, I'm apologizing to any listener who was like, God, stop doing that. I'm trying.
It's like, first the car, then his throat.
Yeah.
All right. So,
five questions we ask every guest. I know them. I'm pretty sure it's been a while. So, are you guys ready?
We'll see.
Are you ready?
I hope so. All right. Number one, what is your favorite sound effect in comics? We're going to go with Jason first.
Can I use one of my own?
Absolutely.
Splicked. Is the sound effect that Bloater uses when he spits his acid spit at things? That's the sound effect. It's maybe a little self-serving to pick. I don't know if anyone else has used that, but Splicked. And then I guess Orp is like his. It's that's what he does instead of bark.
The warps. That's a good one. I like that one.
That was, so, good one. Yeah. That was I guess.
Billion.
I'm going to give a few answers. The one that comes to mind.
Didn't I just tell you about editing all this?
Shut up! Shut your mouth! Shut your mouth! The Thum, just the classic Thum, like with like the Hulk jumping down the Thum.
Okay,
that's a good one. That's a classic that I really love. Mm. Another one that I really really like is in the first issue of My Neighbor Necromancer, the bwoff, the hands coming down. Yeah, so like, and I think I copped it a little bit from Diablo. Because in Diablo 2, when the necromancer raises skeletons, it makes this bwoff sound that kind of comes out. And like, I think I told Jason about it, and he turned it into a bwoff, is what it sort of morphed into.
I can't remember if that was in the script or not, or if we just talked about that.
I think it might have been in the script, but I think then we sort of talked about it because you were wondering like how to actually, like how the letters should look to sort of convey that type of sound.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I'll say, I mean, I guess I have two sort of self-serving ones at this point, if we count Bluff. But in the second issue of Sweetheart, Seda does the rain went outside, and like it's weird because she didn't have a layered tiff for it when she put the sound effects on there. But so in the rain, there's like the SH, the sh sound, but it's like in between and in the rain.
Oh, that's
crazy. And I was like, I have no idea how you did that. It's magic, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Oh, Dylan, now that you're talking, tell me about one of the reasons that you love sequential art.
Oh, because it's super neat.
Cool. Moving on.
I don't know. I can't think of an answer that hasn't already been said 1,000 times, and that's just that, like, the between panels stuff, like how much you can fill in with your own imagination. It's almost like every comic book is unique to the person reading it, because what they fill in between the panels, even though may follow the same general shape, is always a little bit different because it's in everyone else's imagination individually.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason?
I think comics and sequential art, it's a very malleable medium, obviously. It's like any other kind of storytelling medium. But I really, I like the collaborative aspect to it, at least if I'm working with other people. But it feels like just collaborative enough to not hit the too many cooks in the kitchen thing, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of, I like bouncing ideas. I feel like that's when I'm trying to do everything myself, it gets a little bit cacophonous in my head. And I feel like I don't know what's a good idea and what's a bad idea. And I feel like collaborating with at least one other person allows for like a smoother blend of ideas, because you can keep each other in check. I don't know. I mean, I almost like working in comics more than reading comics. Not that I don't like reading comics, but it's like, it's just a very rewarding thing to make.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very like, it's not as complicated as making a movie or an animated film or anything like that. It can be just as impactful. Like if you do it right, and it's, I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite thing. It's hard. It's a hard
question. I mean, those all sound like very valid things to me.
All right.
Yeah, you've done good, kid. Dylan, what do you dislike about sequential art or comics?
I listen.
I've
listened to several episodes of this podcast, and I'm trying so hard not to say the amount of time it takes to make it, because that's what everybody says, I think. But just the amount of time that it takes to make is so rough. The difficulty of finding a fair paying wage for the work that gets done.
Yeah.
That's difficult. And I think those are the two things, I think.
Yeah, more than fair.
I mean, I would echo both of those, except I would say I wish they would take longer and pay less. Those are the things that I wish it would not. Obviously,
awesome. So like a reverse echo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure,
Yeah. No, I completely agree. The amount of time that it takes, especially on my end. I mean, I've had a recent thing where I've learned how to do pages faster, which has been great, which is that I've just stopped penciling my backgrounds and just going straight into inking. So I've only done that on one book. We'll see if it carries through. But
your pencils are always so tight anyway that we're always like, you don't need to ink these, bro. And you're
I think what it is like, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I can do backgrounds. I could, but it's like the gesture of sketching a person. I feel like I still need to actually draw that. But yeah, I mean, that's nice. That literally cut my process time in half. And so now I'm not like, I have to stop doing comics because I will never be able to go outside. But yeah, so what Dylan said.
Oh, I guess. Well, smart guy. What's your favorite swear word? Is that a swear word?
I have no idea. I don't know real swear words. I don't know if I have any fake swear words. I just thought of schlorts, but that's not a real thing. Schlorts.
Is that like when you shit your shorts?
It's summer. I don't know. Be careful not to.
I have no idea.
It's like sharding, but specifically in shorts. Just shorted.
I don't have a fake swear word, I guess.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Sorry.
No, I don't think you are.
I gave you a new one.
Shorts. Dylan, what's your favorite swear word that's not a swear word besides schlorts?
I used to be a really big fan of Shazbot.
Nice.
Shazbot's really good. Another one that I use a lot, but I don't know if it qualifies as a replacement for a swear word, is saying cheese and rice.
That's a good one.
That's a solid.
That's a good one. That's a real good one.
I like that one a lot.
Especially if you kind of like cheese and rice.
Cheese and rice.
I guess crud bucket, is that one?
It's better than schlorts.
one that still has a curse word in it, but it's been altered a little bit, is so my wife and I text, we'll say a JFC for Jesus Christ. And one time I accidentally did JFK. and so now as a joke, we'll be like, Jesus fucking Kennedy.
Oh, that's a good.
That's my favorite swear word. That's still a swear word.
So, guys, I got some bad news. You both met up to celebrate the launch of My Neighbor Necromancer, and you're really excited.
Uh-huh.
And you went to Philly's finest slop bucket place to eat because, as far as I know, all Philly restaurants are just like troughs.
Yeah, that's correct.
What's Plankton's restaurant in
the Chum Bucket?
The Chum Bucket.
They're all just Chum Buckets.
So you guys met up at the Chum Bucket to celebrate with dinner, and you each get spaghetti. And
oh no!
So you are just going to town on these giant plates of spaghetti, but all of a sudden, out of the crater in the Philly streets, because Philly streets are war zones, a giant fish Morlock comes up and it sees what you're doing and it thinks that you're eating a baby. So it comes over and it straight up murderizes both of you.
Oh no.
So the bad news is that you're dead. The good news is that you go to heaven where you're greeted by Jesus fucking Kennedy. And he shows you inside the pearly gates, and waiting for you is a tiny, like a surly gentleman, hunched over a drafting board, chewing on a cigar, muttering about how much he hates Nazis. And it's Jacob Kurtzberg, aka Jack Kirby. And he looks up and he sees you. And what does he say? Dylan, you go first.
Oh no, I was really hoping you weren't gonna say me first. Well,
in your fucking face.
JFK could also be Jack fucking Kirby too. Just so
it could.
That's what I thought you were gonna go with, but
No, we went with Kennedy instead. I don't know. I just that he's seen me He's seen some of my work, and he's seen my hatred of Nazis as well. And he just says, "Proud of you, kid."
Jason.
The first thing he says is, "I really like how you drew me in that book you did, where you, 'cause I did a Stan Lee biography."
That was a good plug. That was a really good plug.
Yeah. It's called Stan Lee, A Life, and the young adult version has some illustrations in it, and one of them is Jack Kirby at his drawing table. So he goes, "I saw that. It was pretty all right." Then he gets mad at me for not ever drawing on paper anymore.
Wow. The dichotomy between these two answers is really entertaining.
We get there at the same time. He says, "Dylan, I'm proud of you, kid. Jason, you fucked up, man."
Well, at first he says, "I like what you drew of me." But then
you did okay.
Yeah. It's okay. Well, I'd imagine that he'd have some thoughts, you know?
That's fair. Getting criticism from Jack Kirby is almost as valuable as getting praise.
Getting criticism from Jack Kirby is like getting a compliment, because it means he cares enough to want me to improve.
I'll accept that.
Even though I'm dead, he's still like, "You can still improve," which is also kind of exhausting. I was kind of hoping
maybe. Well, then like, now you have all the time in the world to pencil your backgrounds.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
What would you hope he says to you, Grant?
Oh shit! Has anyone ever flipped?
You should have been here so much earlier.
Yeah. I've been trying to kill you for years.
You were supposed to die.
I'm Jack fucking Kirby.
I'm JFK. You were supposed to be here before you turned 30.
Oh man.
So gang, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for chatting with me on our typical Wednesday, but recorded this time.
Mm-hmm.
Where can folks find you on socials and sites and stuff? Jason, go.
You can find me on Twitter, at least for the time being, at Jason Piperberg, which is Jason, and then Piperberg. And my website, jasonpiperberg.com. And Instagram at Jason Piperberg. It's all everything with my name, because no one has my last name other than people in my family. So yeah.
Dylan Piperberg, where do we find you?
At Dill Piperberg. you can find me on all on most social medias, at Dill Gilbertson. Like Twitter, Instagram, Hive, Blue Sky, all the ones. you can see more of my work at dylandoescomics.com, and you can find the Kickstarter right now at necrocomic.com.
Nice. Well, thanks again, guys. I'm gonna press stop recording, because that's how you stop the recording.
All right. Bye. Sounds good.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter at grantandstuff.